Thank you for listening to the Fail-Safe Moment. Grab a cup of coffee and let's join Rob Statham for another informative discussion helping people learn from things that go wrong.
Greetings, everybody. This is Rob Statham, your host for Fail-Safe Moments. This is our 40th anniversary of Fail-Safe Network. We were founded in 1985, and here it is at the time of this recording, 2025. And last week, I read an excerpt from the founders, Bob Nelms, founder Failsafe. He wrote a book called What You Can Learn from Things That Go Wrong. And it's actually gone into its 20th printing. And I read an excerpt last week. And the feedback I had, I thought I'd read a few more here, do it a couple more weeks. Certainly, very interesting and gleaning, some outstanding, information, and especially the history of learning from things that go wrong. So I'm going to dive back in and I'll pick up where I left off. The heading last week was The Secret to Success is Failure. And if you weren't able to catch it, I suggest you go back and listen to it. But it ended with his suggestion that we need to do three things. We need to change people's mindsets about failure. We need to learn to anticipate failure. And we need to understand how to address the underlying causes of failure. Well, the next section is addressing the mindset, and I'm just going to pick it up there and keep going. So let me jump into Bob Nelms' book, What You Can Learn from Things That Go Wrong, on addressing the mindset. Several years ago, I heard a high-ranking Canadian naval officer discuss implementing a sophisticated fleet equipment monitoring system. Their intent was to be able to know the mechanical condition of all the shipboard machinery almost on a continuous basis. His talk lasted 30 minutes. After explaining all the technicalities of the monitoring systems, which lasted about 20 minutes, the officer looked straight into the eyes of the audience and he said, "Everything I told you in the last 20 minutes is meaningless." And he threw his speech in the air and papers flew everywhere. He certainly got our attention. He told us none of his suggestions would work unless the attitudinal barriers to implementing and operating these systems are also addressed. Unfortunately, engineers rarely address these barriers. Engineers are a strange breed of people. I am an engineer, so I'm not picking on these people without knowing them. Engineers are trained to design, build, manufacture, and repair things. Since most engineers naturally gravitate to this chosen field, their training intensely reinforces their tendency to think everything operates logically. Everything is machine-like. When they design a chemical plant and specify pumps and pipe materials and heat exchanger sizes, etc., they rely on a cookbook of formulas and techniques. In fact, these days, computers are often used to help design the plants. It's the ultimate in the cookbook mentality. I'm not suggesting this is wrong. I would not want to fly on an airplane whose structure was not designed in this manner. But we run into problems when we think that our management systems, the people who run and maintain our physical systems, operate in a mechanically predictable manner. They don't. People are not machines. They cannot perform like machines. Thank God. It's imperative to be aware of these issues as we begin to explore failure. Certainly, if we want to understand why things happen, we must discuss a root cause methodology. That is the cookbook, the machine-like part of the issue. But as the Canadian officer graphically suggested, the methodology is the easy part. The difficult part's the attitude one takes toward discovery. Perhaps more than anything else, a root cause discovery process depends on people who have an intense desire to find the truth, whatever the truth might be. Unfortunately, not many people truly desire such a quest. As I've been saying, our mindsets about failure are very unhealthy. If we don't change this, nothing else will happen. In fact, this is precisely what I'm attempting to do in this opening chapter of the book, to change people's negative mindset about failure. We must first bring their present mindset into their consciousness. I'm in the process of trying to expose your mindsets. I know you're currently challenging everything that I'm saying, and I know you're crystallizing your own viewpoints of this subject, and this is good. It gives you something to work on as you read this book. Unfortunately for me, however, I have only a limited ability to influence your mindset. If I offend or annoy you, you'll simply put the book down and walk away. But in your world, wherever that might be, you are dealing face to face with the mindset about failure. Whereas I have only one chance at influencing you, you are going to have many more chances. The concept, the next section is the seed analogy. We're still in chapter one. The concept of the seed is a very appropriate for this subject. The process of changing mindsets is similar to the action of a seed. To change anyone's mindset about failure, you must first desire to do so. If you recognize such a desire within yourself, then one way of thinking is that someone has already planted a seed within you. If you're on the edge, not convinced about the value within failure, maybe you will be by the time you finish reading this book. In this respect, I'm planting a seed within you as you read these words. If or when you see the value in failure, you'll recognize a desire to plant the seed elsewhere. Of course, this seed planting is not unique to failure. It happens every time we see something we consider valuable. All seeds have two purposes. First, they provide an initial supply of energy, one which enables the seed to grow until the new creation finds energy sources of its own. Secondly, the seed will provide a plan, the code, if you will, which is to determine the appearance and purpose of the new plant. Of course, the purpose of this particular seed will be to help people learn from things that go wrong. First, the seed will address people's negative mindsets. Then, further into the process, the seed will provide detailed plans for discovering why things go wrong. But first, as I've been saying, we must concentrate on this mindset. Like growing plants, mindsets won't change abruptly. It takes time. If you want to change people's mindsets about failure, you will have to provide the initial supply of energy for the seed, and it will drain you. As in any change effort, the people driving the change must be charged with the spirit of the change. The passion of the change agent must be high. It provides the initial energy required for growth. Once the seed begins to grow, it gets its energy from other sources. But until the growth reaches a certain stage, critical mass, you must provide the energy. Start by attempting to get people to share their feelings about failure. I found it very useful to capture these feelings as they're being shared in the form of images, that is, pictures, graphs, cartoons, photographs, or verbal parables. The process of capturing and formulating the image will not only expose the current mindset, but also allow its honing as various individuals provide input. The images will convey a lasting, detailed message to all who see. Once the current mindset's brought to light, its condition can be examined. In some organizations, the attitude towards failure are very unhealthy. But in most circumstances, the exposed mindsets will be obviously debilitating. It's the obviousness of the flaws which help propel people in the right direction. The second essential ingredient to managing failure is to learn to anticipate it. Unfortunately, failure overwhelms most organizations and many people. Organizations become leaner and leaner. Those left behind are forced to react to skyrocketing numbers of failures. In fact, many people are so busy responding to the failure of the day, they scarcely have time to breathe. How can we learn from failure in this environment? How can we develop a healthy attitude when it's burning us out? Well, first, we must acknowledge the reality of these failures and react to them as they come at us. If we don't, the failure will kill us. I'd never suggest that we should not react to our failures. The problem is people get good at reacting. In fact, it can become a way of life. Many people get intense enjoyment out of the pressure involved in a firefighting situation. This is especially true at work, where we make heroes out of firefighters. But it is impossible to learn in this environment. We might learn how to fight fires, but we won't learn how to avoid them, to decrease, then eliminate fires. Failures must be managed. The best way to manage failure is to anticipate it. What a good line. I'm going to read that again. The best way to manage failure is to anticipate it. When we transfer the pain from the unexpected to the anticipated, we can brace for it. We can get ready for it. We can be poised to learn from it. All failure is preceded by signals. Most of us do not recognize the signals, but they're still there. For example, we all know of the signals indicating heart problems. We've been taught to heed these signals as a warning of impending failure. Being able to anticipate problems in this manner allows us to avoid them in most cases. In organizations, financial, physical failures can be overwhelming. But the rules are the same as those for managing heart problems. First, define the signals which will warn of impending failure, then listen for the signals. Finally, when a signal's detected, act on the causes. In most cases, the failure can be avoided using this strategy. But when firefighting's overwhelming, there's little time to listen for signals, unless you allocate a special resource for this purpose. Many organizations allocate a fixed group of people to monitor vital signs for signals of impending failure. It's vital to provide this resource if one is to overcome the firefighting syndrome. I will not attempt to add to the mountains of technical advice which already exists in this area, but I would like to highlight a serious trap. Most efforts at managing failure begin by attempting to monitor signals. In managing environments, conventional wisdom says the ability to warn people of failure allows the scheduling of repairs at convenient intervals. Whereas this intent is certainly valid, its normal practice is seriously flawed. As monitoring efforts evolve within a facility, they begin finding more and more equipment and process deficiencies. Because of this, the process must shut down for longer and longer periods of time to correct the deficiencies. But most significantly, many of these deficiencies are repetitive. The same conditions are being reported over and over again. In other words, our processes are being scheduled down for longer and longer periods of time to fix repetitive problems and conditions found by monitoring teams. One plant with a massive equipment monitoring effort is down almost 50% of the time to allow for repair of all that they found wrong. In essence, therefore, the unfortunate effect of many failure avoidance efforts has been the transferal of reactive, unexpected downtime to planned, expected downtime. Organizations are expending significant amounts of manpower to monitor their equipment and schedule outages with little, if any, effect on total downtime. The answer to this dilemma is twofold. First, substandard conditions should be corrected on the spot as soon as they're found, whenever possible. This would prevent a small problem from growing into a large one, and it would eliminate the need to schedule downtime. Of course, this action's not always possible, but more to the point, the causes of repetitive substandard conditions should be investigated and eliminated, which is the real subject of this book. I'll stop there. I'm actually enjoying this. This is pretty entertaining. I've read this book obviously more than once, but reading it out loud with you, different things seem to stand out. I guess I'm reading it more from someone else's perspective than just my own. I'm really enjoying this. I hope you are too. Feel free to reach out to us in comments, or if you have any questions that have popped up. If you're interested in the book, you'll be able to find it on our website. I think I'll finish chapter one next week, and it talks about addressing root causes of failure, and he gets into the filter and starts talking about people and issues that arise. And that's how he finishes chapter one. Remember, the title is Failure is Not What You Think It Is. So appreciate your time. Until next time, we'll talk to you then. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Failsafe Moment. We'd love to hear from you. Share your comments and questions below or contact us through our website, www.failsafe-network.com. Once again, that's www.failsafe-network.com. Until next time, have a great day.